What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday. And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. You know, a lot happened over the weekend in combat sports. From the UFC to the PFL, all the way to the Olympic Games, and coming up on today's show, I am going to get into it, or at least the good stuff. I'm going to talk about the emergence of Shara Bullitt. My concern for Tony Ferguson and the Olympic boxing controversy that has taken over Twitter. A lot to get to today, guys. Let's begin here. I don't know what to do over here. Tony Ferguson, I was going to let the whole thing go. I was just going to let it go. And I've kind of rehearsed it in my head, having a feeling that sooner or later I'm going to have to discuss Tony Ferguson. Like, that's just going to come up. I treat it like a death. Even if it's a death of a career, there's a mourning process. And when you show up to the wake, whatever grievance you might have, you bury. You don't say it. You don't say it then. Even if the poor guy owes you $40, you don't mention it. And I feel as though that's the right stance to take with Tony. But it's getting a little bit hard. Like, I feel like those rules, the rules of etiquette, the rules of sportsmanship and camaraderie. And I know him, and I like him. And we train together. I got my own things to boost Tony. But it feels like that goes out the window, and I'm going to have to steer back to being a little bit more candid. When one glove goes in and one glove comes out, it kind of changes the deal. So when Tony then gets to the post-fight press conference, he stands up, he takes the mic, and he makes some statements that were simply fiction, but they were concerning to me. If he was a worker, if it was me, if it was Colby, just for example, you would have taken in the show, you would have enjoyed it, and off you go. You might have even called a friend or two or sent him a screenshot if it was in Prince today. Did you hear what he say? But you wouldn't be concerned about our mental well-being, because we have a history of being workers. So I've got to offer that. Like, if this was meant to be a performance and entertainment, and this is the first time ever that he goes into the entertainment side of it, okay, great. We could all get up and walk out, but that sure wasn't my interpretation. I thought we were being very candid and very sincere. I took him at his word, and his word was flat frightening. His words were, hey, if all these thousands of fans are going to come out here and spend all this money to come and support me, they'll come and follow me somewhere else, which is absolutely true. Absolutely. If you were so over that an arena full of people bought tickets for you and flew over there for you, yeah, they'll go with you. And there is, they got a word. They've only got one. They've had two in history. Right now, the word is Conor McGregor. In all of history, it's Conor McGregor and Kimbo Slice. Are you aware of that? Does that surprise you? The one guy that could go anywhere and do anything was Kimbo Slice. Are you aware of that? And the only star that this industry has, which means could go anywhere, and the people will come, is Conor. Conor McGregor is so over, they load up jumbo jets in Ireland, and they fly him to Las Vegas. Conor McGregor is so over, he will have about 10,000 people that come out to Las Vegas. I've seen this with my own eyes, that don't have tickets or any plan to get tickets and go to the event. They just want to be in Vegas and support him. And they go out and they line the streets. And they sing and they chant. And they don't even go to the fight. I mean, that's how over he is. Nobody did that with Tony. Nobody. No, I don't mean not thousands of people. I don't mean, you know, I had six or seven. That's not quite it. No. This is nobody. Zero people. Booked a ticket, flew over there, did whatever you had to do to come out and support Tony. When a guy takes his gloves off and it's a retirement, you cheer for him. It's called etiquette. Never in history of sport, any sport, has somebody called it a day and not got in a standing ovation. Now, I know that I'm stating the obvious for you. What I'm saying is, this is where the concern comes. He said it in the post-fight press conference, wherever I go, I'm just going to get better and better and better. He said that. Like, I would imagine it couldn't be any worse. What kind of a bar is that? I'm going to get better. A national champion wrestler with a black belt under Eddie Bravo just got jobbed out in the first round by a move that you learn on your first day. I don't have a problem with that. By the way, Father Time catches on all of that stuff that people like to say. But my problem is there wasn't a hand fight. That's my problem. Getting beat, losing a position, all of these things are real. You're dry and it's the first round, kisses and stud. Like, all of these things are real. But a natural reaction, if I was to take somebody that was not a trained fighter, forget about the black belt, forget about former interim champion of the world, forget about the national champion, just a guy. And I was to put him in that technique, he naturally, with no trade, he naturally is going to come to the problem, which is the arm around his neck. That didn't happen. That is my problem. Whatever loss of motor skill, whatever loss of capacity to not only defend that like a fighter, to not defend it like an untrained fighter, it was a problem for me. And this comes from concern. By the way, the losses didn't matter. He was supposed to lose that fight. Like, Tony losing that fight comes to the surprise of absolutely nobody. But if you go out and you set a new UFC record the wrong way, and you have a match where, thank God and heaven above, there was a grappling hold as opposed to being pounded out. If a guy gives you his microphone, which is the most valuable thing that Chiesa could have that night, the single most valuable thing, it's not the check that he got in the back for the win bonus or even being eligible for a submission of the night. The single greatest thing he got that night that he had to fly to the Middle East for was that microphone, and he gave it up out of respect. And he gave it up because you had taken your gloves off, which is the international sign of retirement. And when you get the microphone from the guy that earned it, you don't shine him up, put him over, and then you don't retire. One glove in and one glove out. It's a double cross. It's a dick move. I can live with all of these things. I can live with saying, hey, you got this wrong, and you fought out your contract, and it's no hard feelings. You're going to be remembered wonderfully. I can live with those things if I didn't have the slightest bit of fear and concern that he is going to pursue a fight and possibly get one elsewhere. That's concerning to me. I don't use as evidence, well, you know, he got a little bit older. I don't use that as evidence. He's fighting the best guys. This isn't a surprise. I can't shout at you today because of what I saw. I could have shouted this last week. I knew this was going to happen, and so did you. That's not what this is. It's baseball. Anything in life, three strikes, and you're out. You feinted retirement and took a microphone from a guy that earned it. That's unsportsmanlike. And it's a double cross. Strike one. Post-fight press conference. Clear as the day. Right, didn't take any shots, clear as the daisy, believing that a building full of people flew to a different country to watch you fight. Strike two. Being put in the most basic position and not defending it or attempting to in the most basic way. Strike three. Shara Magomedov, of which I will not be repeating for the rest of this piece. I'm going to call him by his nickname, Bullet. And Daniel Cormier renamed him something like Shara Bullet instead of Shara Magomedov. I like it. By the way, I like Shara Bullet. So it doesn't come with a disrespect. I'd like to share that with you. So something's happening there. When this guy comes on TV, something's happening. As soon as I see him, as soon as I see his face, whether it turns into an interview or a fist fight, this is a Hollywood character. I mean, it really is a guy that could come straight out of the movies. In fact, I'm told he's did his training camp in L.A. because he's in L.A. doing a movie. He plays like a security guard at a rental car store or something like that. But then in the evenings, he's an assassin. And it's like, yeah, I don't know anything else, but I see it. I mean, there's something there. Now, while I'm looking at him, I'm looking at his fancy spots. I'm looking at the fact that Daniel Cormier is giving him cute little nicknames. I'm looking at his record, which is unbeaten. And I'm juxtaposing that against his skills, which appear to be somewhat limited. Like, it really does throw you off when you got this Dagestani guy, but he's the kickboxer or he's not a wrestler. I was like, well, you must have wrestled at some point. Like, we have the wrestlers and they know how to kickbox. So you got this kickboxer, he must know how to wrestle, but he doesn't. Now, I think it makes him interesting. I feel like something's happening. He's not the first guy that had to learn on the job. Do you want to know who wasn't ready for this? Israel Adesanya. Israel Adesanya's very first fight was with Marvin Vettori. Now, Marvin is tougher than hell. But he showed us if you get Izzy down, which isn't all that hard to do, you can keep him there. And Michael Bisping was calling the fight. And Michael Bisping, who's a Hall of Famer in that weight class, said it's very clear how to beat him. It's very clear what you need to do. He was critical, and he was tough, and he was right. And Adesanya comes back in his next fight. All of a sudden, he can still take him down fairly easily, but you couldn't keep him there. That was the game that he made. It was one thing. He didn't fix everything at once. He fixed one thing. And his next fight, he's in with his toughest opponent yet, which was Derek Brunson. Easily his best wrestler. And Brunson never even got him down. So Adesanya went from take him down, hold him down, to you can't hold him down, to all of a sudden you can't take him down. And then all of a sudden he's down the road, he's scrambling, he's coming up from Kelvin Gastelum, he's throwing up triangles himself. And it's one of these things, but we watch him learn on the fly. I'm not certain that we haven't done that same thing with Alex Pereira. Like, as I look at Bullet, guys, and I realize he's rough. He's rough. This isn't where I would think a guy with that kind of a record, this kind of a look, a natural fighter. Like, there's only a few guys you meet that look like cage fighters. Like, I don't really know what that means, cage fighter. But if I was assigned and I had to put a face with it, Robbie Lawler would probably be the greatest face in history to put that. That's what a cage fighter looks like. And then, you know, I might, if Lawler was the Matt Brown would be a great one. But Bullet would be a great one. And I think Patty the Batty's a fine example. I feel like Patty the Batty was a regional fighter. He's a guy. He's got some good quips. You got to geographically, you got to keep him in one location. You can sell some local tickets. Don't main event him, but put him in a little bit of a feature match. You're going to squeeze that for about 3 years. He's going to pan out of the business. And how wrong was that? Patty just kept getting better. Patty's now two fights away. They got to be the right fights, but two fights away from fighting for the world championship. Israel Adesanya went on to win the world championship. He had a debut that Michael Bisping, who is standardly not critical, not live, was critical. As a former champion, he was able to look at this guy and say, and he went, Adesanya wins to the world championship. The example of Pereira, who's now the world champion. And I'm just sharing with you, like, I'm not convinced the Bullet quite has the weaknesses that we suspect. I'm not convinced of that. There are certain guys that will do what they need to do to win and nothing more. Yoel Romero might be the finest example. And you guys saw it in fight. Yoel would lose the first round. He'd only work as hard as he had to in the second round. And if time's ticking down in the third, he'll go on a sprint and he'll TKO you. He'll get you out of there. He was saving that energy. He was planning to do that the whole time. Just a matter of when is he going to go on this sprint. Yoel would do wrestling matches. I've been following him since he was 19 years old. He would do wrestling matches, part of the Cuban national team. And he would take on guys that were okay. I'm going to call them JV guys. Just because it's a word that you know. But he would take on a JV guy and he would beat him by 1 or 2 points. And then his next match would be against a world medalist. You go, well, I know he can't deal with the world medalist. He barely got past that JV guy. And then he'll beat the world medalist by 1 or 2 points. And you start to realize, oh, he's only doing what he has to. He's not going to do any more, and he's not going to show any more. And I feel as though there's a chance the bullet's doing that. I feel as though if the competition raised up to where you were sure, oh, no, he can't deal with this guy. I know that because I've seen other fights, and I see him with a deficit in this position. I'm not certain that there isn't a bit of a rope-a-dope going on with him, much like the Yoel Romero example. And the bullet did something that was very good. He called out Nick Diaz. Now, he's not likely to get the fight with Nick Diaz. He's not likely. But it's not impossible. It sounds a lot like Nick's comeback could be just that. Just a fight. A match. And if you're going to do that, you would see where a promoter wouldn't mind shining up a different guy. I don't know where that Luque business as it relates to Diaz is. I don't know. I haven't heard. The fight was supposed to go down this weekend. It gets pulled. I thought it would get replaced at the Sphere. It didn't. I don't know what's going on there. And I'm not telling you that I think that the Bullet's got some traction with Diaz, with Nick Diaz. I believe Nick is going to fight with Luque. But the Bullet did something else with that call out. He's letting us know where he's at. He's letting us know, hey, get all the headlines, and I get all the posters, I get this huge reception, I got this quite a fan base, I got a beautiful record, but I'm not make-believing that I'm a top guy. I'm not make-believing that I should be in there with Robert Whittaker, for example. So, I liked it. I thought he had a very good performance, all things considered, and I think he then pulled down expectations, which, by the way, it felt like it raised him. It seemed like everything was right there. And what's next and who's next? It's the whole reason I am coming to you guys. I want you to leave me comments. I want you to tell me down below. Who should he be in there with? Who do you want to see him with? Where is his star potential? Can you place him in a feature match opposite an opponent that you haven't heard of? Because every now and then you can. Every now and then you can do that with a guy. And the Bullet to me seems like the right type of guy. Chimaev versus Whittaker got announced. Do you want to know what the top line is right now? The top betting line right now is that the fight doesn't take place. You can bet that. It's called a prop bet. You can bet this fight that was just announced. It's the main event, by the way. It's 5 rounds. I would assume a number one contenders match. The top line is a prop bet. Will Chimaev make the walk? And right now, no is the favorite. Wow. If there's ever been a way to make a guy make the walk, like anything in life, you will greatly, when it comes to human psychology and manipulation, you will greatly get somebody to not do something if you call it out ahead of time. I mean, right, this is very basic. Like, I don't know if there's anything that will get that fight done more. Not the money, not the main event, not number one contendership. I don't know if there's anything that would get it done more than them openly saying, we don't think you could pull this off because of him, right? I mean, this is kind of unheard of. And not to mention, I must tell you, a little bit rude. Chimaev has been mistreated lately. I don't fully understand where that came from. I could run the tape back, and it started years ago when he took on Gilbert Burns. Like, he looked like a human being. He looked like a dog, tough human being who faced adversity and found a way. But his stock didn't go up. It began to come into question. And all of a sudden, that undefeatedness started to come into question, and he left that weight class, and he moves up to 185. Couldn't quite main event him, couldn't quite count on him enough, but got him real close, put him in a co-spot. Big pay-per-view. Bringing Kamaru Usman, who was the champion of the world at 170, when Chimaev started his run through the division. Like, that fight had been discussed a lot. And at that time, Usman was a 2-1 favorite, a hypothetical line. So that very fight is going to take place, but Usman's not the champion now. And it was enough to switch the line. Chimaev was a 2-1 favorite. And then Chimaev lost a round, according to all of the judges, and according to many viewers, he lost two. According to many viewers, he lost that fight, and I'm remembering off the top of my head, but I think it was a split decision. I believe one licensed judge had it for Kamaru Usman that night. And there again, that pulled down on Chimaev. There was something perception-wise of the courage and all the bravado going to Kamaru Usman for taking a short notice fight. But it didn't go to Chimaev, who also took a short notice fight, who went from a hard fight and a tough opponent to a world champion, a future Hall of Famer. Like, you would think that there'd be a little something there. And no matter how close it was, if you found a way, you're one of three men in the history of the world that could get the jump on Kamaru Usman. However you did it, you did it. You would think there'd be a little bit of credit there, but there wasn't. In fact, it made him a number one contender. He never fought for the belt. He's not scheduled to fight for the belt. I use that just to support my premise that people have been a little hard on Chimaev lately. Now, there is a rumor that Chimaev has travel restrictions. That's a really big deal. So when you have a date and you're counting on him and you're going to come to that location, you're coming there for him, and you put him in a main event spot, it is a big deal that he'd be able to show up. But there's an insinuation as though Chimaev is using fake excuses, fake injuries. I mean, how far are we running that back? Are we running back 3.5 years when he had the Leon fight and he ended up with COVID and was on a respirator in a hospital and almost died? Like, are we seriously questioning? Really? I think it's rude. I think it's unfounded. But according to the bettors, it's the likely outcome. Do you think that? And it seems like a wildly difficult fight for Whitaker. It seems Robert Whitaker, who's on his way back, he's climbing back up, trying to climb a mountain that he's already climbed. I mean, do you understand the mental toughness that would take? And Whitaker's not only willing to do it, he's willing to do it 70% longer than everybody else on the card that night. He's willing to do it for two extra rounds, and it's not the first time. So, what does come from it? Does it become a number one contenders match? And that's a very hard question to answer. There's not a scenario where Whitaker will be fighting Adesanya for the title ever again. It is just as much likelihood of ever getting that fight, no matter what he's being told. I don't know that I'm just sharing with you a reality check. Surreal Gone will get another fight with John Jones the same night that Chimaev and Izzy fight if the belt is up. So, if he loses, does he draw to Du Plessis? I would watch that. But if he does, if this is the number one contenders fight, what are we doing with Sean Strickland? At some point, no matter how great Strickland is, Chimaev does get his turn. He just won a number one contenders match, by the way. I mean, he just won it. Hand was hurt, couldn't do the fight. So, if Chimaev is to get the win, then what do we do with Sean Strickland? I still have to come back to that question. If that is a number one contenders match, or if it's a situation where, hey, we got to see what happens. Let's just wait. Let's see what happens, see how it plays out, which is 99% of fights. Like, that would be a perfectly reasonable thing to say. A perfectly reasonable situation to find ourselves in. It doesn't do away with my question, which is, what do we do with Sean Strickland? We wait him. We don't fight him. He's got to wait for this outcome. And by the way, what if it's a diverse outcome? Then what happens? We don't give Sean the opportunity. We got to call him and have something for him. What is that something? What is the other idea? And it's very hard to know, right? It's very hard to know without the outcomes in a sport where the landscape changes so fast. I don't expect you to have an answer for this, by the way. I don't expect you to have an answer for me when I say, well, Whitaker's never going to fight Adesanya again if it's for the belt. I don't expect you to have that. What I'm trying to get you to is whether it's Sean or whether it's Whitaker or it's Chimaev with a possible travel restriction, a former broken hand and a number one contendership that was lost because of said broken hand. What I'm speaking to is an incredible mental toughness from these guys. Anybody, all of you watching, no matter what your job is, you are incentivized to do it well. And if you got asked to do a really hard task, you would want to know, why am I doing that? That seems a little harder than what is reasonable. A little harder than what I would have to do for the same amount of money. So what is the incentive? And none of them know. They just have hope. And they got a dream, and they're willing to keep it alive. And they're willing to do some very, very difficult things. And it is very honorable. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale. Like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale. Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, and how does my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss like the majority of the male population does, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that actually work, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized, chewable oral spray and serum treatment options so you can find what works best for you. Reaching out for help in this area can feel a bit embarrassing, but Hims has made this process so dignified and simple. All you have to do is answer a few questions online and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. No in-person visits to the doctor or pharmacy are needed. The whole process is 100% online. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get that confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/chale. That's Hims. HIMS.com/chale, like the famous gangster. For your personalized hair loss treatment options, HIMS.com/chale. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
You've got enough on your plate. Mundane meals shouldn't be one of them. Get an endless variety of the freshest, best-tasting food from award-winning chefs delivered to your door with Cook Unity, all at a fraction of the cost and time you're spending now. Take a load off and leave your meal prep to Cook Unity, affordable food crafted by award-winning chefs delivered straight to your door. Go to cookunity.com/podcast or enter code podcast before checkout for 50% off your first week.
Looks like Usman and Bilal Muhammad have found one another. And you know what? They went back and forth. They went back and forth on social media. And it was funny. It was nasty. It was fighting words. But while staying G-rated, staying friendly, no profanity, not teasing one another, not dragging down the other one, but they got the party started. It was interesting. As they go back and forth, there was no mention of Chael. I did find that interesting. I could not have been clearer, and I could not have been any more singular in that I was the only voice to try to bring them together. No phone call, no text message on the side. Like, I don't have to be mentioned in the tweet. I could have just been sent a little, great idea and thank you. And it is a great idea, and you're welcome. But it's a great idea for two reasons, not just because Usman's that guy. Kamaru Usman is a bad dude. Like, but I don't feel like you guys necessarily credit him for that. Like, just imagine he went and fought Muhammad. I don't think you give him credit. I mean, I think that you would say, well, it's a world title fight. What risk were you taking? Of course, that's a big opportunity, so you took it. It's like, well, yeah, maybe. But if you put yourself in his shoes, would you? If you got cleaned up by a guy twice, and you saw that guy get cleaned up, would you want to fight? I mean, would you put yourself in that spot? Think about back in school, the guy that picked on you, and then you saw him get picked on. Would you then want to take on that guy? I'm just sharing. I think Kamaru willing to fight Bilal, which he is willing to do, speaks to the toughness. I think it backs up my claim that Kamaru is a bad dude. He left the weight class, went to a different country on 8 days' notice, and took on Chimaev. I mean, you're not going to convince me that he wouldn't fight a Rakhmonov or that he wouldn't fight Leon for the fourth time that he faced Leon. I mean, right? It's a really incredible thing. And going after Bilal, whether it's got a title or not, is a really hard night out. Like, there's nothing there to apologize for. But the reason that Kamaru needed to do this is, first off, the ranking support it. His resume supports it. Like, that's a very easy sell. But I don't think that Kamaru viewed himself as a guy that was going to get the title shot. I think he viewed himself as a guy that's lost in his division, left the division, but still lost. So he's 0-2 in his last two, and therefore doesn't qualify for a title shot. I think that's how he sees himself. But it's not how we see him, is it? Like, that fight with Chimaev, are we calling that a loss? Was that a loss? I mean, did Kamaru stock, when you watched him, then you, oh, boy, I sure think Kamaru's good. And then you saw him fight Chimaev, and you come away and go, well, I guess he's not as good as I thought. Or did it go the other way? Did it go the other way, which is you were with the odds makers, and Usman's going to get his ass kicked, and then it turned out he didn't? That's how I see it. I'm quite sure people agree with me. So you're then confronted, because Usman's not wrong. Like, he's a smart guy. He knows what time it is. He's looking at the map. And whether I want to cover for one of his defeats or not, he did lose his last two. That's true. And he's had that opportunity many times. There is something to be said for parity. I agree. There's something to be said for Rakhmonov, who did not lose his last two, or either of his last two. In fact, he won his last two and the 15 other before that. But I don't think that he is main event ready. I mean, when we start guessing who should be next, it's not a matter of who do we think or what does the rankings say. It's not. When we start, who do we think is going to be next? Ultimately, what we're doing is saying my guess to the inner workings of Dana's mind, right? That's ultimately what we're saying. And I think that Dana looks at Rakhmonov very favorably, but also understands that people don't know what a Shavkat is. I, for the longest time, now, I do know now. Believe me, I get Rakhmonov. But I, for the longest time, didn't know if Rakhmonov was a first name, last name, or nickname. And it is one of those situations where we've got other undefeated guys. That alone doesn't put you in line. You must have what's known as a mandate of the masses. You must have that. And when guys start making their argument for title fights, they either forget that or they didn't know it in the first place. And they'll start telling you what they're ranked. They'll start telling you who they beat. They'll start telling you, I won four of my last fights. So they'll start, they must have a mandate of the masses. If you could have the people behind you, or you could have won your last five fights. I mean, I'm just giving you an example. It's not even close. You have the people behind you. Like, that's being tested in some regard every time you hear an interview. In regards to Conor McGregor, he can come back at any weight class and fight anybody he wants, including the champion. So it's one of those things where you don't have to be wildly popular, you have to be Conor McGregor. I'm just sharing, like, you got to have the people, and I would think that Rakhmonov likely doesn't. But they're coming. Like, we can all feel it coming. It just seems if you could get him one more, if he could just find one more and build it right. And if that's accurate, and that's my sense, then it opens the door, right? Like, clearly the guy to fight Blahal is Rakhmonov. You're not going to bring in an argument that is stronger than Rakhmonov. Anywhere that you go, you're not going to find it. After Rakhmonov, quite frankly, you want to know who comes after that? You guys might not like this. Do you want to know who comes after that? Ian Garry. But I think the same thing goes for Ian Garry, and I don't predict that he's going to go next. Because of this, creates an opportunity. And I think that Kamaru Usman is in the perfect place at the perfect time. I'm glad that these guys found one another. I think that's the direction we should all be talking. I feel like that's the direction we should all be going. And we definitely have the right pieces. It's just a matter of what order are we going to do. Like, I don't think you have a better idea for Usman than Muhammad. If you had a different idea, I think that you'd put Usman with Rakhmonov, which was Usman's idea. That's what Usman was trying to do. Okay, great. But if we put them together, who do we put against Muhammad? It's one of these spots where it seems like we could figure everything out. It seems like we could just make it happen. If Kamaru was to lose to Rakhmonov, Rakhmonov would go in and fight Muhammad. Can we agree? Okay, then what difference does it make? Kamaru gets over on Blahal. There's your fight with Kamaru and Rakhmonov. So I'm just sharing with you that I think 170 is very interesting. And I really like the idea and the concept that Blahal has stood back, looked at the board, and now he's starting to go in the direction of Usman. I think that's the right move. And one thing that Blahal won't do, one thing Blahal has never done, is lie to you guys. He never tells you, I'm ready to do this. I'm ready to beat this guy. Trust me, my skills are better. I'm ready. He never embellishes. He makes claims at times, but then you see him and it was accurate. Blahal, when he did this piece, when he tried to get all the cannons now facing Kamaru, he did it in a very different way, and I really appreciated the psychology of it. He talked about Rakhmonov. In fact, he even called him the boogeyman. He referred to Rakhmonov as though that was a harder and more dangerous fight, of which he is definitely willing to do and will be doing, expects to be doing. But for now, there's an opportunity to get a hold of Usman. And at any weight class, and it doesn't matter where you've gotten, including Blahal's spot to the top of the card, the main event, the world title, right? The highest spot you can get. There's not a lot of world champions floating around. Like, in any division, there's not a lot of world champions floating around. If you can get your hands on them, it's a very interesting thing as to what you can do for your own legacy. Where people are going to look back and go, whoa, that guy. And they're not going to understand the time. They're not. It doesn't work that way. And Blahal spoke about that to a degree. He was very open. He was very honest about it. It was a very interesting pivot. It was a very interesting call out. Because of the simplicity, plus the response of Kamaru, where they both want the same thing. But instead of trying to pretend and come and do this pro wrestling shtick back and forth for you guys, they were pretty open. It's a good opportunity for me. This is Kamaru speaking. Blahal saying, I would like to do that deal with Barkmanov down the line. I liked it. I liked the fight. I want to keep that going. Even though they didn't thank me, they really should have somewhere in there mentioned a credit, something. But it's okay. I know they were thinking of me. Gal Boxing. She's out of Algeria. And she's made all the headlines. She's made all the news. That's a man. As a matter of fact, you get people, they don't want to say it's a man. They want to sound really smart, and they'll start telling about the XY chromosome. Yes, the XY chromosome is what that athlete possesses. And therefore, biologically, that is a male competing against the females. Now, what an incredible story to have out there. I want to get right to the point. That is not true. Full stop. Now, I said this on my social media. I said this on the X platform, responding to somebody who went on and said terrible things about this athlete and how unfair it was and it was unjust, and you have a man beating up women, and how dare the IOC not step in? And they have a test, and that test says, genetically, that woman is a man. And the IBA, the International Boxing Association, is the ones that conducted the test and tried to stop her participation in the first place. The athlete appealed it. It went to the IOC. They said, you're in. Now, where this becomes very tough is to get people to listen. And maybe that was just because it was X. Maybe just in 160 characters or less, they're not able to understand this. Let's back up. There's a report that came out and made it onto Peacock, who I hope gets sued to hell and back, that this athlete, the Algerian boxer, did a test that came back stating she had the XY chromosome, which is biologically a male. That's not true. Now, I don't know where they got lost on X, where they thought Chael was coming you woke. I'm not debating the XY chromosome biologically equaling a man. That's not the part I'm telling you is not true. That test was not done. That's the part that's not true. The IBA has never said that test was done. The IBA did find something within her blood work chart that they thought was an inappropriate advantage. And if I'm to be really specific with you, if I'm to quote exactly what they found, I'll repeat what I just said because I was quoting exactly. They found something. Now, that is exactly what was written up, guys. Word for word. No one ever stated that it was a genetics test, chromosome XY. It was no part of it. But it was never said to be part of it. They said they found something. Now, that would be extremely inappropriate for them to have information, that kind of personal information. You take somebody's blood, you have information to their chart, whatever that might be. It would be beyond inappropriate to reveal that. In America, it would be called a HIPAA violation. You could not do it. But it must be that way in other places as well, because they didn't do it. They didn't supply it, which would certainly change things. They referred to it as something. So whoever got a hold of that statement in their own mind decided that it was a genetics test representing XY, which would biologically be in the male's division. That's what they decided. And it was a very weird thing to do. It was a very weird thing to make that decision based on hearsay coming from a second party of the IBA. Now, I'm not telling you we got to question the IBA. I'm telling you, to take hearsay, but then to change the story so drastically. The IBA said they found something. the person that got that report said it was an XY and it was a crime. And that was just weird right from Jump Street. Like, as soon as I heard XY, that's weird. As soon as I hear chromosome, that's weird. Because that's not how people talk. I mean, I got to put up with the vernacular. Let's change it right now. Biologically. I've heard that word before in my life. I've used that word before, not five times. In my life, and I've even taken biology classes, I have not said biologically five times. I have not. And now you hear it all the time. When what they could do is take that word out and just say the word real. But it's a very weird thing. Real, while accurate, is deemed insensitive. And now you got to say biologically. But now we came off of that vernacular and we went to chromosomes and we went to X and Y. That right there is a red flag that we have a liar amongst us, because that's not how people talk. I mean, right there when this article came out about a chromosome test and XY, as soon as they said that, it was a massive red flag that we got a BS artist amongst us. Now, the IBA does stand by the fact that they did a test and that something was found. They stand by that. And they tried to ban this athlete from going to the Olympics. That's true. This athlete appealed the IBA to a much higher body. I mean, IBA and the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, these aren't even close. The IBA is a dot on the map, and the International Olympic Committee is the International Olympic Committee. You guys had never heard of IBA. You didn't know it stood for International Boxing Association until I told you a moment ago, and that's okay, but I'm just sharing for you. You have a very small body, right? You have a security guard at the mall versus the head of the CIA, all right? You have a guy that watched a court television show versus a Supreme Court justice. I mean, that is the difference in this. So you defer to the IOC. You defer to the head of the CIA for your information. You defer. It was such an interesting spot to read. It was heartbreaking. It really was. These athletes and these amateur and these Olympic athletes, first off, I just know fighting. People don't go into fighting that had great lives. And people don't do well at fighting that had great lives. So now I'm looking at this athlete. I don't imagine she was Miss Popular in school. I don't imagine she's been asked on a lot of dates. I don't imagine a lot of nice things happened to her. But I do know the sacrifice that it would take to make an Olympic team, let alone to make the Olympic finals. I do know that you're either in your parents' basement, you have no money, you have no job, this doesn't pay. It's a pursuit of a dream because you have a calling that it helps you to represent your country, accurately or not, but that is what drives you into this position. So you either live in your parents' house still, or you're two or three deep in a rented apartment somewhere. Like, it's not great. You're eating SpaghettiOs and leftovers. It's not great. It's very hard to do. But there is one payoff, which if, should you succeed, and only three of them will, gold, silver, and bronze, somebody somewhere will pat you on the back and tell you, good job. That is the only thing that you get. Like, she doesn't leave this. This Algerian boxer doesn't leave this and go home into a bathtub full of hundreds and diamonds as the big party's waiting downstairs. It's not like that. She's broke. She's an amateur athlete. She's going to go fight four people this week and get nothing for it. None of you would have even known she was fighting. Even if she wins the gold medal, you would not even know she was fighting. You didn't watch. You don't look forward to it. That's how much of a nothing you get for this. So now imagine you reach your goal, you sacrificed, you ate the SpaghettiOs, you lived three deep down in mom's basement, you did all of these things, and you brought honor to your country. And not only did somebody not tell you good job, which is the only thing you ever hope to get, they now do the opposite. And they tell you you're a man. Imagine those social events. Imagine her in the hallways of school. Imagine how many guys have lined up and asked her on dates. Do you think that number goes up? Do you think life for her gets better? This is such a terrible thing for her to have said about her. And it's not true. There is no test. There is no Olympic athlete in any sport anywhere that supplied a test that anywhere on it talked about XY chromosome. Just so you know, that is not a procedural issue. That did not happen. But moreover than that, nobody said it did. They said they found something that would be private. That would be their business. She shared that private something with a much higher body. And they said, no, everything's fine. So I'm just sharing with you, that's what happened. There's more confusion because the president of the IOC spoke on this. And the president of the IOC did not go out to defend her. He held a press conference to pretend he was defending her. And all he did is cover the IOC to the best of his ability. But where that gets confusing is if that was a male that said, I want to fight the females, they would have let her. The IOC would have let that happen. It's just not what did happen. So when the president goes out and he gives his speech and he gives his talk, pretending it's looking out for that athlete, had nothing to do with that. He was looking out for himself. He knows he's got to deal with it this week because it's coming up in track and field to an athlete that hadn't been on TV yet and it's coming up in powerlifting, but the president is probably going to win the whole thing. He's going to have to deal with it. So he was trying to feather the nest and talk about it would be okay, but in the process of doing that, it sounded as though he backed the claim in the first place. I spent 11 minutes and 12 seconds telling you guys this story. I should have been able to do it in one sentence, but I tried that on social media and it didn't work. The claim that that boxer submitted a genetic test that came back chromosome XY, that claim in and of itself is not true. To further that, the IBA, who started this whole thing, never said it was true. They said that they found something. That was appealed. IOC, who looks at the WBA as a nothing, which is what they are. They are nothing in sport that matters. My son is a member. We pay our dues. Believe me, when I tell you that they're, I mean, it's the way that it goes. You have to go through this barrier. They have never said anything like that. They just said that they had something. Everything else was created through Peacock and the internet. But if you care about the truth and you care about the reality, I just gave it to you. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. I want to give a shout out to James, who left me a review on Apple Podcasts, which reads, undisputed champion of the world, not to mention the smartest guy in the room. Well, that was awfully nice, James. And it was accurate. I appreciate all your reviews, and I'm going to be back with more smart stuff on Friday. Until then, everybody, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.